T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Say my name.
Mike Florio.
Get the name right. That's all that matters. Spell my name right or say my name properly.
Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports.
Hearing Florio writing articles about it.
NFL Insider.
Take a spin around the league. We bring in Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio.
My name is my name.
With Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
Time for some football talk with Mike Florio. He is on Twitter at Pro Football Talk, and he joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. We're participating, Mike, in a mass civic delusion that the Bears, what, current 3% playoff chances, worth taking this game tomorrow night seriously against the equally 6-6 Cowboys.
Yeah, look, it's not. I mean. Anything can happen, yeah. Right? Uh-huh. And every year I say this, teams before the season, whether it's coaches, players, GMs, owners, our goal is to win the Super Bowl. Our goal is to win the Super Bowl. The real goal for any franchise in the NFL is to be relevant in December. And the Bears are relevant in December. And that's good, right? There are plenty of teams that aren't relevant in December. And how it plays out, there's going to be another December where the mathematical probabilities will be better or worse or whatever, and you go play the games and you see what happens. But the Bears don't have an easy road by any means, and I think we know who the six teams who will make it to the postseason in the NFC are, and barring a collapse by the Packers, the Vikings, or really, that's pretty much it at this point, because the 49ers and the Seahawks aren't going to collapse, and if they do, they still have enough wins to get in. So it's going to be the Packers or the Vikings collapsing. If that doesn't happen, then the Bears aren't getting in, the Rams aren't getting in, and none of the other teams that are currently in the hunt are getting in.
Yeah, so the Bears are relevant, lowercase relevant. The Cowboys are relevant, uppercase relevant. But it's because of the rest of that division. And the issues surrounding this Cowboys team seem like ones that they've dealt with before. I wonder how different it does look, though, from your perspective in the way that Jerry Jones has talked about his head coach, has talked about his quarterback, has talked about his running back, even all of them coming up to this season.
Jerry Jones is the guy in his backyard with a lawnmower that won't start, and he is ripping the cord as hard as he can in every direction possible. And you know how you do it, like sometimes, well, if I pull it from the side, or if I pull it straight up out of the middle, or if I pull it straight back, he is trying everything he can to get the lawnmower started. And you know, at some point he just needs to stop talking, because there are mixed messages coming from him. Usually the good cop and the bad cop are two different people. He's both, depending upon which week it is, and whatever he thinks at that time is the best strategy to try to boost the team toward winning. They, I think, right now are more likely to win the division. It's going to come down to week 16 at Philadelphia. If the Cowboys win that game, you know, what scares me is the very real possibility that the Cowboys can treat week 17 like a bye. And the loser of the San Francisco at Seattle bloodbath is going to limp into Dallas the next week and potentially lose to the Cowboys, when that shouldn't be the case. They shouldn't have to go on the road. I just posted about this. I don't know why the NFL clings to the idea that because you happen to be the least dysfunctional of four horrible teams, you're guaranteed a home game in the wild card round, no matter how good the five seed is. I don't like it. It's not fair. I don't know what the argument is against it. And I would like one of the 32 teams to propose, when it's time to put in the submissions for new rules in March of 2020, propose that rule change, propose a requirement that at least you have a winning record to host that game, or just straight seeding based upon where you finish in the broader NFC standings. Yes, you get a playoff spot, even if you're 8-8 and there are teams that are 9-7 that get frozen out. But no, you don't get to automatically host that game. I think that's a problem. I don't know why they won't fix it. And every few years, we find a situation like this. This could be the most extreme, though. We could have like a 5-game spread between the Cowboys and whoever they end up hosting in the wild card round.
Jerry Jones made the cryptic comment of Jason Garrett will coach in the NFL next year. Yeah, but he's currently the coach of your team. It's a very strange thing to say. Would another team hire Jason Garrett? And who has a good, solid head coaching job first, Jason Garrett or Ron Rivera?
Well, first of all, I think it'll be Ron Rivera. 2-time coach of the year, took a team to the Super Bowl. And the fact that Ron Rivera's got 4 weeks of a head start on everyone else, and now all the owners out there who may be thinking about upgrading the team know that he's available. I look at it this way. Jason Garrett's original contract with the Cowboys expired after the 2014 season. Everybody knew it was going to expire. Everybody knew he didn't have an extension. Was anyone clamoring to hire Jason Garrett? I mean, is there some professional courtesy we don't know about where teams give other teams a right of first refusal or an opportunity to rehire their coach when the season ends? There was no talk about anybody, you know, wanting Jason Garrett. I mean, think about other coaches out there. If it was a given Mike Tomlin was going to be gone from Pittsburgh, I think we'd already know who's going to hire him next. Remember last year when there was a thought that John Harbaugh might be done in Baltimore and they were lining up to potentially hire John Harbaugh? I mean, the buzz would be out there. The only thing we've heard, it was a week and a half ago, it was one of the Sunday Splash reports that Jason Garrett's first choice would be the Giants if he's not kept in Dallas. And I feel like that was a shot across the bow at the Cowboys to be careful what you wish for. If you don't bring this guy back, you may have to deal with him twice per year. And that's the same day, 12 hours later, that Jerry Jones kind of took the gloves off a little bit and started calling out Jason Garrett. So I think there's, you know, a little nuance, a little subtext, a little back and forth, a little passive-aggressive stuff happening. But I don't think Jason Garrett's going to be a head coach in the NFL next year. The only way he's going to be is if he keeps the Cowboys job. And I think he needs to do something that no Cowboys coach has done since 1995, which is take the Cowboys to the NFC Championship game. I don't think he has to punch it through to the Super Bowl. I think if he just gets them a game away from the Super Bowl, that will vindicate Jerry Jones' faith in Jason Garrett and cause Jones to give him a new contract, even if it's only like a 3-year deal.
Did Panthers owner David Tepper do the right thing in cashiering Ron Rivera? Is he prepared to go a step more and wipe the slate clean when Cam Newton has his, apparently he's having foot surgery? They could move on from both head coach and quarterback real quickly.
Well, I'd like to know who David Tepper has in mind, because I don't think you just blindly flush one coach without considering what's behind door number two. That would be reckless. That would be foolish. And so David Tepper, I believe, enters this process knowing who he wants and probably having a pretty good idea he's going to get who he wants. And I know that runs contrary to the letter and the spirit of the Rooney Rule, but that's how the sausage gets made. Owners decide who they want before they throw away the guy they have.
So who is it?
I don't know. David Tepper knows, and we're all going to find out. And look, they've done a very good job of keeping things close to the vest. There wasn't even the courtesy 5-minute heads-up leak to Schefter or Rappaport that Ron Rivera was getting fired. And usually that happens. And so much of what passes for journalism in this industry is somebody getting a 5-minute warning on an announcement that's about to be made. Big freaking deal. There wasn't even that. So they're on full and complete lockdown in Carolina, and only Tepper knows what he's doing, and we're going to find out in due course. And look, whoever the coach is going to have major influence on whether or not Cam Newton stays. And if I'm Cam Newton, I'm probably ready for a change of scenery. And if I'm a Panthers fan, I'm fatigued by the constant worry about Cam Newton. Is he healthy? Well, will he stay healthy? Can we use him the way we always have? How much should he run? How much should he not run? Can he be a pocket passer? Does he want to be a pocket passer? Is his shoulder okay? Is his foot okay? Does he have some other injury we don't know about? And I just think you get to a point, almost like Colts fans were with Andrew Luck, where you hate to see him go, but it's kind of a relief that you don't have to constantly obsess over every little ache and pain of a franchise quarterback who's been beaten to the ground over the course of his career.
Cardinals cornerback Josh Shaw has been suspended for betting on football, betting against his own team as part of a parlay. And the reason this came to light is because on his application for his betting account at Caesars, he listed his profession as professional football player. Caesars alerted the NFL, they alerted the Nevada Gaming Board, and this became what it became. I was letting my young partner, Mike, know about the saga of one George Rogers. And Connor didn't believe me.
I didn't. I truly didn't, Mike.
That George Rogers wrote multiple personal checks to buy thousands of dollars worth of cocaine, and in the memo of the check would write the word cocaine.
I didn't see that coming.
Each and every time. Now, but I'm wondering,
he was just buying the rights to the classic Eric Clapton song.
Sure. And what's the ramification of something like this? What does the league do? Obviously, you must make an example of him, but we're looking at something precedent-setting here, are we not?
Well, and here's what perplexed me on Friday. Why does the suspension of Josh Shaw for betting on football games, NFL football games, end up being tucked into a late afternoon Black Friday news dump? Shouldn't that be something that, as the NFL, you puff your chest out and you make it clear that if you bet on football, we're going to catch you and we are going to apply swift justice to you? And as reports have trickled out regarding these circumstances, and specifically the one you just referenced from ESPN.com, the idea that he put professional football player on the application for an account at Caesars Sportsbook, and Caesars promptly notified both the Nevada Gaming Commission and the NFL. Look, that underscores the fact that unless the apple falls out of the tree and hits the NFL right in the head, I don't know that they're going to catch people betting on football. And there are a lot of guys out there who are far smarter than Josh Shaw, who, if they really want to bet, are going to find a way to do it without ever being detected. And I think that that's one of the reasons why this got tucked into that little underbelly of the news cycle, because you can huff and puff all you want if you're the NFL. There is no way they have the resources from an investigative standpoint to blow anyone's house down unless they do something really stupid like list professional football player on their sports book application for an account. And that's what concerns me. How many guys out there, and I've thought for years, there's got to be guys who are playing in very high stakes fantasy football leagues that we don't know about. And how's anybody going to find out about it? And what's the real incentive for the NFL to do a scorched earth investigation so it can let everyone know how many corrupt people there are that are betting on the game or playing in high stakes fantasy football? You don't want that out there. It's just like cheating on the injury report. They don't want us to know how much cheating there is on the injury report. It's a very fine line between doing the right thing and protecting your overall image. And I think that this really is the tip of the iceberg. This is just that little piece of the iceberg that was too dumb to keep the ice underwater. I think there's plenty of ice that we don't see, and I think that's why they tried to kind of bury this into a spot where it wouldn't make the biggest possible attention grab, because the more you think about it, the more you peel the onion, the more you realize there's got to be a lot more people than Josh Shaw out there doing exactly what Shaw did.
Since we're talking so much about coaching today, with Ron Rivera getting fired from his job in Carolina, who is your coach of the year right now?
Mike Tomlin.
Yeah.
And here's why. Usually you judge coach of the year based upon how a team performs in relation to the generally accepted preseason expectations. Last year, Matt Nagy, right? Nobody thought the Bears were going to win the division. Everybody thought they were going to be in fourth place. Hey, they win the division. Hey, Matt Nagy's coach of the year. For Mike Tomlin, there were pretty good preseason expectations, but the Ben Roethlisberger injury, and this injury, and this hardship, and that hardship, and the adjustment on the fly of the expectations was, you know, this team was going to have to scratch and fight and claw to avoid being the worst edition of the Steelers since 1969. There's been no Steelers team that has won fewer than five games since 1969, and after their first three games, they had to go 8-5 to avoid that, or 5-8 rather, excuse me, to avoid that fate. They've gone 7-2. So I think Tomlin deserves serious consideration. Now, look, when the season ends and we see who the one seeds and the two seeds are, then, you know, maybe one of those coaches is going to get the votes. But I think Tomlin, if he gets to the playoffs, he deserves serious consideration, and there should be a real debate on whether or not he should get that prize.
Now, I'm with you, and I think if I had a vote, it would go to Tomlin right now. But I do find it, I don't know, somewhat disappointing that in a year where John Harbaugh has done what he's done to revamp that offense around a generational player and throw convention aside, that he will get somewhat tossed underneath a stellar coaching job by Mike Tomlin, given everything you've just said.
But if the Ravens finish with the one seed, I think Harbaugh is the other guy that we have to take very seriously. Okay. And then it becomes that, you know, it becomes a great debate, and it may come down to week 17. Maybe that's what should be on the line when the Steelers face the Ravens. Coach of the year is the winner of that game.
Yeah, I love what he did to go outside of conventional norms in reimagining how their offense is structured. And I think it should be rewarded when a coach, instead of saying, well, I do what I do, and this is what I do, I've got a system, say that instead the coach says, all right, what do I have, and how can I best deploy them? I would like to see that reinforced and that rewarded, because I would like to see more of it from NFL coaches.
Especially when we consider how close it really came a year ago.
Yep.
I don't know what happened in Baltimore to cause the folks in the front office to wake up and say, we're making a hell of a mistake here if we move on from John Harbaugh. But it was smart by the team, and it was smart by Harbaugh to find a way to continue to work together. And here they are. And right now they hold the number one seed. And if they keep playing like they have, they're going to barrel right into the postseason and maybe straight to Miami for the Super Bowl.
Mike, thanks, man.
All right, see you guys.
That is Mike Florio here on a Bears Friday on a Wednesday. It's brought to you by Dunkin'. Chicago runs on Dunkin'. Pete Futek is going to join us next. He's usually with us on our Dunkin' Bears Fridays, but he's going to join us next because
our Wednesday is a Friday.
Everything's all messed up because of when the Bears happen to play. So college football talk with Futek next on The Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. Pete Futek.
He's great with a capital G at the highest level of grade.
Publisher of college football news.
What is it that makes our military superior? He was like, that's easy. We're the only football playing nation in the world.
He hates your favorite team.
Names don't matter at the end because they're just going to put Alabama in the college football playoff anyway.
Pete Futek with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Time for Pete Futek, who is brought to you by Fogo de Chão Brazilian Steakhouse. Treat yourself and your guests this season with a visit to Fogo de Chão Brazilian Steakhouse, where you can have it all. Discover your favorites at Fogo in Chicago, Rosemont, and Naperville. Reservations at Fogo.com. He is on Twitter, at Pete Futek, and he joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. All right, big picture. We've got the newest rankings out. Where do we stand? What's at stake? How's this all setting up?
Okay, so basically we know that Ohio State and LSU are in no matter what. They can lose their respective conference championship games, and they're still going to find their way in. Clemson, I think, is probably in no matter what. They're not going to lose to Virginia, so let's just assume they're in. So right now the real fight is for that fourth spot. If Georgia beats LSU, done deal. Now we got our four teams because Georgia would be in. And here's the wacky part about that. If you're Ohio State and you're the number one seed, and hey, look, hey, we're going to get rewarded with the number one seed, And if Georgia beats LSU, your first-round opponent in the semifinal is LSU. Congratulations. So there's that. But then if LSU, if this goes chalk and LSU beats Georgia, then it's going to come down to Utah on Friday night plays the Pac-12 championship. If it loses to Oregon, forget about Utah. If it beats Oregon, then the bar is set for the Big 12 championship with Oklahoma versus Baylor the next day, and it's a beauty contest from there on.
Who wins that beauty contest? I mean, I know Matt Rhule wears a really weird shield vest hoodie thing on the sideline for Baylor, and it doesn't look pretty, but his team's kind of fun, and they've only lost to Oklahoma.
And it gets kind of blown off that they're right in this. And the assumption is that, well, it's going to be Oklahoma or it's going to be Utah. It's not going to be that hard for Baylor to get in this. And if all they need is for LSU to win and they need Utah to lose, which could both very easily happen, or Baylor could just be great against Oklahoma. So the problem is that fourth team that's going to get in this, if it's not Georgia, all right, well, thanks for playing. There's three teams, and there's that fourth team. If Georgia is good enough to beat LSU, then all of a sudden now we've got a crazy college football playoff where all four teams are going to be good enough to have a shot. If it's Utah, if it's Baylor, if it's Oklahoma, nah, they're going to get wiped out by Ohio State.
I'm looking at my blank Heisman ballot, and right now it's Joe Burrow preemptively. But then you watch those three Ohio State guys, and I wish I could vote for them as a group, because them all together, just those three dudes, that's make a pretty powerful entry right there. But I can't. So I guess right now I have Fields second, and I think I have Jalen Hurts third at the moment, just because Chase Young got taken out of a game. And you can't have that. You can't, if you're a defensive player, you can't affect a game that big. I don't care. People are saying you go to the NFL right now, you'd be an elite pass rusher in the NFL. I didn't really see it. I said, well, it's hard with three guys on you. Do it with three guys on you. It's a high bar for me. But what's fair right now after Burrow?
Yeah, exactly right. And I said this a couple weeks ago after he dominated Wisconsin. Everyone's like, oh, Chase Young. No, he's a defensive lineman, and you can lose Chase Young and be fine. And they lost Chase Young, and they were fine. J.K. Dobbins has been fantastic, but you can lose him and still be okay. You can't lose Justin Fields. And it drove me up a wall after all the Tua Tagovailoa stuff when Ohio State's up, 45-19 or whatever it was, and they still kept it. Justin Fields hobbling around. They still put him back in. And it's just, what are you doing? Like, come on. These guys have got to get smarter. So to answer your question, the one guy you can't lose is Justin Fields, which kind of means he's kind of more important than everyone else, which kind of means that he probably deserves that more than anyone else. Let's see. If he goes off and goes nuts against Wisconsin, then, okay, maybe he has a better shot at this. And if Joe Burrow gets shut down by Georgia, all right, this is kind of when it's on. But Burrow's been fantastic. It's his to lose, obviously. And you're right. I mean, Fields and Hurts, they're both right there. In terms of an MVP kind of a thing, I'd probably put maybe Hurts ahead of him. But, all right, this is when the voting comes down to it, because this is when, last year, this is when Tua lost it. It was the Tua Invitational. He gets hurt against Georgia, and that was about it. So now you got these three guys, and, all right, if Jonathan Taylor goes, let's say Jonathan Taylor goes off against the Buckeyes, which I don't think he'll do, but then he all of a sudden bursts back into this. And, of course, we know that it's how this works, where if Chase Young gets 12 sacks against the Badgers again or whatever it is they had last time, then he's going to certainly be third or something on just about everyone else's ballot.
I think it was 35. It was 30, so 35 sacks.
Did you read the Tua interview? It was out of Alabama. Really open and long-form interview where he discussed the calculus as to whether or not he's going to play next year, whether or not he thinks for his value. I mean, he clearly understands how much money that injury is costing him right now, and he knows it. The money's just been absolutely vaporized, but he doesn't know how healthy he is, and he's not quite sure that they've got to go through a process of talking with some evaluators and really getting a read. It's just a shame, I think, that it's too bad for him. It just sucks, and this whole system that might force him to have to play again and risk another injury playing for free to try to make up for lost money just seems unjust.
I think he sort of goes and he's still at the very, very worst. I think he goes in the middle of the first round. Someone's going to say, you know, this guy's just too talented. And I know we're kind of in an era where quarterbacks become the new running back, at least a little bit. But with his accuracy, he's just got ridiculous skills. His problem is, though, it wasn't just this. He's always hurt. So if you're taking a chance on him, but you're taking a chance on pure greatness here, get ready for this to be the storyline. We are going to have, I think it was 16 players skipped bowl games last year to get healthy for the NFL. Now that Alabama is going to be in a bowl that doesn't matter for the first time in 5 years, you could have as many as at least 10 Alabama players who are going to be like, thank you, bye, and not play in the bowl game. And that's just going to add to the story. You're going to have, I'm predicting close to 25 to 30 guys who are going to skip their bowl games, and rightly so. I mean, because there's just no point. Jake Buck continues to be the example. Like the Michigan, former Michigan tight end played, blew out his knee in the Orange Bowl. He was going to be a top 50 pick, and he's caught 8 passes in the NFL since then. It's not just about the money. The hard part for college people to remember is, it's these guys' dream to play in the NFL. They want to be, they all want to be with their guys and play in college, but your dream is the NFL. That's why you're going to these big schools and doing everything that you're doing. And, it's losing all that money is a real problem with this, too. And you're right, these guys are getting smarter and more savvy about this.
Well, not if you ask Coach, look at me, look at me. I don't understand how you can sit there and say, ranked 3rd in the country at Clemson, that your division, your conference is being looked down on by the media and we're not getting the respect we deserve.
He's insufferable.
Because North Carolina is whatever. I can't either. He drives me up the freaking wall. Does he have any leg to stand on, though, given what he's saying about the level of competition in the ACC?
The only way I'll defend him on this is that, one, it's always been his MO a little bit. Oh, we're a little old Clemson. Someday someone will figure out that we're playing college football down here, and then hopefully people will care about it. That little all shucks kind of act. You know what? He did that last year, and somehow his team sort of responds to it. My running gag this week is, after all the Billie Eilish Van Halen stuff, I defy you to ask 100 people where Clemson actually is, and to Dabo's point, I guarantee you that maybe 3 people will get that it's in South Carolina.
Fair.
So it does have a little bit of a complex when it comes to this. But on the other side, politicking doesn't really work on the College Football Playoff Committee, but I'll give him a little bit of a pass on this. He's sort of right, because even though they're 30-point favorites against Virginia, Virginia's pretty good. Let's say they did lose. Like I said before, LSU and Ohio State, they're in. They could lose by 20 in their conference championship games and be fine. Because they didn't play anybody who's ranked in the College Football Playoff Top 25 until now, and that's Virginia, and they're going to get knocked out once they lose. Let's say they do lose to Virginia. He's just trying to build up that sort of benefit of the doubt in the politics sort of way. So I kind of get it, but at the same time, it's all an act, and it's kind of annoying.
Throughout the entire conference championship schedule here, all the way from Utah and Oregon to Army and Navy, because I'll count that for you, what one player has the most to gain in these performances heading into the NFL draft?
Oh, okay. Yes, if Jalen Hurts goes crazy, because we're still kind of waiting to see what he can be in terms of the pecking order of all these quarterbacks. He's not considered to be Kyler Murray or Baker Mayfield in terms of, all right, he did enough to be a number one overall pick, but he's been ultra efficient. He's just kind of one of those guys that someone's going to have to figure out. He doesn't necessarily have the arm or the NFL raw tools, but you could argue that those don't matter anymore. And if you're looking for the guy who, everyone's going to be looking for, okay, where are we missing the next Lamar Jackson? And no one's going to be saying Jalen Hurts is going to be a wide receiver. But he's not necessarily Jackson as a quarterback either. So he's going to be one of the toughest guys to figure out. But if he goes off and he's that guy, first of all, in terms of intangibles, just off the charts. I mean, he is the ultimate leader. Everyone loves him. He's still a legend at Alabama. And if he has a humongous game with everybody watching against Baylor, we know how this works. All of a sudden he goes from being, I don't really know what the rankings are on him right now. I don't think he's a first rounder necessarily, but if a guy like a Tim Tebow can be a first rounder back in the day, if you're looking for who's going to be that next Lamar Jackson, with his speed, his intangibles, and his skills, he might be as close to it as possible.
Thank you, Few. Appreciate it, man.
There you go.
Thanks, Pete.
Pete Futak at the bottom of the hour, brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Want to ride a Zamboni on the ice during intermission of a Chicago Wolves game? Sign up to take a spin on the new Turtle Wax Ice Box. Visit ChicagoWolves.com or call 1-800-THE-WOLVES to learn more. They are winners. They are the Wolves. Oh, boy, do I have a couple of stories for the midday midway. One is bad food news.
Oh, not okay.
It's bad food news.
Right.
The other, it's the definition of getting medieval on someone's ass.
All right. Have a tasty new audio treat for you. We can't play it on the air, but it is tasty and very much. Oh, yeah, no, it's not clean at all, but it is tasty and it's fun. And it brings me back to my childhood / high school days. A lot to do in the midday midway. That's coming up next. Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, midway.
The midday midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the midday midway with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
The midday midway is brought to you by New Mail Medical Center. Discover the new you, newmailmedical.com. We started the show by talking baseball with the White Sox in hot pursuit of Zach Wheeler. The Cubs described as aggressive and manic and motivated and obvious in their desire to trade someone. Then it was football talk with Mike Florio, college football talk with Pete Futek.
Little blast from the past for me yesterday afternoon as I was leaving the show. I saw this news on Consequence of Sound and got excited about things. We've been talking a lot of rock music lately on the show with your, would you call it a rediscovery or a reinvestment in Sturgill Simpson's rock stuff?
It was actually just taking advice from Shane Reardon.
Yes. I gave you the out. That. I didn't want you to have to say that. I didn't want you to have
to said, you'll like this. I want to get you to like this, and I like it.
And you're selling me on a couple of those tracks, but I'm into finding some of the new stuff now. I'm scrolling around on the apps trying to find some new stuff, and this popped up. I don't know if you were into these guys back in the day. I was, because I was like a sophomore in high school or something. But when Tenacious D came out with their first big rock album,
I don't know where to put them because I can't take it seriously.
You shouldn't. I
know they're good.
Yes.
I know they're fun.
Yes.
I'm sure they'd be great to hang out with.
Dave Grohl drummed the entire first two albums, I think.
I know. I can't put them in a bucket to appreciate it, I guess.
Fun. The bucket they're is fun. They're in the fun bucket is what they are for me. Well, apparently Jack Black and Kyle Gass, and Jack White have all teamed up for a new collaboration. It's a song.
It had to happen, right? Jack Black and Jack White.
Jack Black, Jack White. It had to happen. The resulting collaboration is Don't Blow It, Cage. You can find it. It is Not Safe for Work from the very get-go. Not Safe for Work, but really funny. And the story goes that Black and Kyle Gass were visiting Jack White's Nashville home over the summer and sat down in the studio and got to some things. And it got me to thinking, if Jack Black and Jack White are in a studio, how many pounds of weed do they go through before issuing a 2-minute song? Because I'm going with like 4 pounds.
Or it's just like edibles and everything. That's a lot.
That is a classic rock and roll scene, despite the fact that it's kind of goofy and fun. Anyway, go listen to it if you're into it. It's funny and good.
I have a list here, and it's a list for you, not for me.
Okay.
It's a list that made me feel really old. Because the name of the list at Screen Rant is 10 1980s sci-fi masterpieces you've probably never seen.
Okay.
And I saw it. I said, oh, okay. And then I go through the list. I'm like, yeah, we all saw all of these.
Oh, okay.
Pretty
all
much.
Right.
It's simply because of the age I was. Like, I was in high school, junior high and high school for so many of these.
Right.
And we went to a lot of movies and we were really into sci-fi stuff. Everybody had their Betamax or the VHS, and these were things we rented. So this is more for you. It's a perfect millennial list to test where you are on this.
So I will tell you, and I, at the risk of pizza challenging myself, I hope that I've got a pretty good number of these covered.
I think you will.
Older cousin, like 12 years older than me, deep into the sci-fi, and I like to think that I was shepherded, but we'll see.
All right.
You seen that movie?
Altered States.
No.
That it,
No.
Yeah.
Altered states. All right, on the list.
I think it's William Hurt's debut, right?
Okay.
Scanners.
Yes. Seen that movie?
Yeah, seen that movie. Yeah, for sure. It's a reference to Scanners in Tommy Boy, and I never knew what it was about, so I heard that the line. Have you seen Scanners? So I went back and I watched Scanners.
All right, The Dead Zone.
Seen that movie?
No.
Christopher Walken.
No.
No? Young Christopher Walken. No, okay. Escape from New York.
Seen that movie?
Of course. Of course I've seen that movie.
All right.
Absolutely.
Videodrome.
Seen that movie?
Videodrome?
Freaked me.
No.
The F out.
Videodrome. No.
James Woods. It's a David Cronenberg movie. It is out there.
So it's James Woods.
Yep. Twilight Zone, the movie.
Yes.
Seen that movie?
Yes. Yes.
This one I don't have to ask, and I have not seen it and don't want to. Dune.
Dozens, seen that movie?
Dozens of times. Long live the fighters.
All right, 1984, that was released in 1984 with John Hurt as Winston Smith.
No.
Seen that movie?
No, I never have. Have you?
I have not.
I don't remember that one coming around, and I have not seen it.
This is one that I have seen and wish I hadn't. The Abyss.
Seen that movie?
I love that movie.
Oh, it's awful.
It's so long. It's preposterously long.
It's still going.
It's 9 hours long.
Nothing happens.
He is still descending to the bottom of the abyss.
It's horrible.
I liked it.
The movie itself, it's an aptly named movie because that's you feel like you're in an endless pit of despair.
I thought it was good.
And this is the number one, and I have not seen and really want to. John Carpenter's They Live.
I have seen that movie. Terrifying.
I've seen
absolutely horrifying.
I haven't.
I don't do well with the horror stuff anyway. That was a rough one for weeks afterward. Not quite to the level of seeing Aliens when I was like 10, but that was rough. Yeah. It's good. Probably half of the list, something like that. I feel pretty good about that. Okay, have a poll. Survey that I have the results of, and I think the I'm Fat podcast might want to dig into the results of this poll. It turns out that the average American spends about $9.22 a week on snacks. That adds up to $479 a year, meaning just under $30,000 over your lifetime on snacks.
What constitutes a snack? Anything that's like eaten non-mealtime?
This is a
kind of food.
A non-mealtime food.
Any food.
Snacks. Snacks. Yeah, absolutely. This snacks. So the question is,
I don't get it.
This is like potato chips. This is like
So it's snack food.
Yes, yeah, snack food. The snacks that you eat outside of snacks. It's like porn. You know it when you see it. It's a snack.
All right, but what if it's like 3 o'clock and I'm hungry?
A lot of times those two go together.
And it's not a mealtime and I want a half a chicken. Is that a snack?
You know, the computer boots on and Rick opens up his bag of Doritos. You know what he's in for. The sensuous sound.
Why is my dog orange again?
So the survey goes.
It's real bad. I was trying.
Once they poll, I'll say survey here. The survey goes: sweet or salty. 37% of responders say sweet snack. 34% say salty snack. Where go you for your snack?
I don't really snack.
You have. Well, you haven't lately, but you have a pack of pork rinds. Once a week.
Every once in a while, I'll have a couple of pork rinds. Sure, definitely salty. But
salty,
you know, like for me, like if I'm wandering around Mariano's and I'm hungry, I get a couple of chicken legs.
Yeah, but I don't get pretzels. Weird.
Like my default food is chicken legs.
Yeah, but your snack is lunch. You're like the one person on this planet that goes instead of snack, I'll just eat lunch.
Yeah.
All right.
But when in doubt, I'll eat a chicken leg.
Well, and the survey just doesn't really work
doesn't
for
apply
you,
to
although.
Me.
The top snack for Americans.
Potato chips.
Milk chocolate. Potato chips for second.
Milk chocolate?
Any sort of milk chocolate type snack.
Weird.
Potato chips number two.
I'm going to squeeze in two here because there's going to be a French fry shortage. Apparently, it's a poor potato crop. This is the bad culinary news that I promised that cold and wet weather has stunted the growth of potatoes and the price of French fries might go up. So the U.S. Department of Agriculture thinks that potato production is going to be down 6%. Which means they're going to go to foreign potato producers to provide foreign potatoes for our French fries. So that's unfortunate. But that's not why you called, because this story is absolutely incredible. I take you to London. A divorced mother who is in a love triangle is on trial for getting her two lovers to fight one another to the death.
No, it's Thunderdome.
I have trouble with some of these names here because these are difficult Lithuanian names. Asta Juskoskin, 35, was married to Giedrius Juskoskis, 42.
Okay.
But she was having an affair with Montis Kvedaris. They both claimed her as their own. So she allegedly arranged for them to fight to the death in what was described in court as a medieval duel. Giedrius was found dying with 35 stab wounds to the neck, chest, and shoulder.
Oh my God.
On June 17th. Kvedaris, who admitted murder, started his relationship with Juskoskin after being released from prison in Lithuania.
Well.
However, Giedrius did not want to divorce his wife, and they continued to have a sexual relationship. The prosecutor said that in their different ways, each man felt they had claims over Juskoskin. The situation was inevitably going to come to a head, so they met in Stratford, East London. And she apparently was manipulating the whole thing. She knew that Kvedaris was intending to use serious violence. And then she actively assisted Montis in removing some important documents from her house. She harbored him in her house following the murder, selectively deleted text messages that were eventually phone seized by police. So she is denying conspiracy to murder and perverting the course of justice. But
oh my God!
Yep, that's pretty medieval.
Lithuanian prison, man, that'll change you. You ever been?
I haven't.
That's tough. It'll change you.
Is it your first job out of college?
Second, but yeah, okay. that was a rough go.
That's so low,
bro. Lithuanian prison. That's tough.
That's the Midday Midway. It's been brought to you at the top of the hour by the Chicago Wolves. You want to sign a one-day contract with the Chicago Wolves and earn a $5,000 signing bonus? Visit ChicagoWolves.com for details. Then visit the Sprint store in Arlington Heights between 1 and 3 p.m. December 14th for your chance to win. We got a bunch of things moved around. We got Hub Arkish under the weather. But we have no less a football authority than Robert Mays, who is scheduled to join us right here in studio to talk football. You don't want to go anywhere. You want to hear this, so keep it here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.